Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers on the broadcast today, coming to you from Carson City, the Chairman of Assembly Judiciary, Steve Yeager, plus on the Power Pundit panel, Alexander Marks, John Sandy IV, Russell Rowe, and Trey Abney. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
From your house to the White House, the folks at D&D Roofing can get it fixed with their eyes closed.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail. We help it grow. And we mean business.
RANNV.org.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Safety is the number one priority for the trucking industry. Over $7 billion a year is spent on technology, like this electronic eye, that will apply the brakes automatically. But the most important factor for safety is the truck driver. These hardworking men and women who safely move over 70% of our nation's freight and 94% of Nevada's. We thank you because trucks move America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from Carson City. We're in the Capitol building here as the legislature, we believe, is going to wind down next week. Assemblyman Steve Yeager is here. He's the chairman of the Assembly Judiciary Committee. Pleasure to have you back on the program, and I really appreciate you getting up this early after a very late night working last night.
It is always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Marijuana consumption lounges. It seemed like the answer to the question of we have a legal product, but for tourists especially, no legal place to smoke it. Suddenly, gaming has come in with objections. They want to have bigger distances. There's a lot of talk that gaming just came in and said, you know, we're not in favor of this. And I guess my question to you is multifold here. So if you go back a few years, when gentlemen's clubs opened up in Las Vegas, that ended up taking $30 million a year away from the gaming industry because they could not provide that service within their building in their structures, and therefore that money was gone. And they were not happy about that. When you talk to lobbyists for gaming and executives and you say, well, why don't we have a lottery? They say, because we'd rather keep the money ourselves than have a lottery. Is this a similar situation where gaming is concerned that they could lose a substantial amount of money if there are consumption lounges?
I don't think so in this case, and I think the reason why is cannabis is still unique in the sense that it's federally illegal. So gaming has always been very cautious about cannabis, and during the last interim I served on the governor's gaming policy committee, and one of the questions there was, you know, can gaming establishments even host conferences that cater to businesses that are attendant to cannabis? So, you know, if you provide the lights for the grow facilities, and they were very deliberate in figuring out was that going to jeopardize their gaming license? So I think in this instance they're coming at it more from a need to be cautious. They don't want to have cannabis and gaming mixed because of the federal illegality and because that could potentially jeopardize their licensing. So I think I see this as sort of a logical next step. I understand some folks are frustrated by it, but you know, in terms of them needing to be cautious about allowing these establishments close to their casinos. So I think that's really the driving force. And if the federal government were to reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, I think you'd probably see some of that resistance go away. But I won't hold my breath waiting for that to happen.
Okay, so Las Vegas has already legalized a consumption lounge. Is that lounge that's been legalized now in jeopardy because of what's going on here at the legislature?
I think it is. I mean, if Assembly Bill 533 passes, and again, it hasn't gotten an assembly vote yet, but probably will tonight or tomorrow, but it essentially says local governments cannot license consumption lounges until we get to the next session. And what would happen before that is the gaming policy commission, I think it's called in the bill, basically the advisory body to the cannabis board, would have a chance to look at that over the next 2 years and come back to the legislature and decide, you know, as a state, do we need to put some minimum standards in? Is the state going to be the licensing agency? Is the local government going to be the licensing agency? But to get to the heart of your question, yes, I do think this sort of stops the local efforts in their tracks. As far as I know, there hasn't been any that have actually opened locally, so there's not anyone who's going to have to close their door, but they won't be able to open for at least a couple of years.
But you know, and I'm sure you've been getting a lot of contacts from people in the marijuana business who are somewhat apoplectic over the fact that in their business model, this was part of the plan. I guess, you know, as you know, nobody watches this program. So, I mean, we can talk here and nobody's really listening.
But I listen to it.
Well, bless you. I appreciate that, sir. But, you know, let's face it. You know, you go to a concert at a casino. You go almost anywhere these days. You're going to smell marijuana. People are consuming it, but what we've done is we've now put everybody who is consuming marijuana in a position of being under an illegal act. Is law enforcement going to be charged now with policing this, with going into a back alley behind a casino or into a concert area and, you know, arresting people because they're smoking marijuana? Because we don't provide them a place to do it?
So, you know, when the voters passed the initiative for adult use marijuana, one of the parts of that initiative was no public consumption. So that has been the law here since.
But not enforced, really.
Not enforced, and you're right. I don't think it's been enforced, at least not on the criminal side. I mean, I do know that when people are caught, they're given warnings. They're asked to get rid of the product. I haven't heard of any situations where people are being cited or arrested for mere consumption. To be honest, I don't think that's going to change. They're still more concerned with people selling on property, and I think that's going to continue to be a priority. But I don't think anything we're doing as a legislature or this Cannabis Compliance Board changes what the existing law is. So, you know, to the extent that establishments have had that as part of their business model, it's always been a restriction in the initiative that public consumption is not allowed. And in fact, in the initiative, it says specifically that consumption is not allowed at the point of sale. So as of right now, dispensaries cannot allow consumption on their property. And even as a legislature, we would not be able to change that until 2 years from the effective date of the initiative petition, which would be November of this year. So the best we would be able to do is put something in law that would trigger some months from now. So I understand there's a rush to move forward, but I also think in this space it makes sense to be a little bit more deliberate. The last thing I would want is to have different consumption lounges opening in different jurisdictions and having problems and then having to come in and potentially look at shutting doors. That, I think, would be much worse than letting everyone know we're going to be deliberate and make sure we get it right.
Have you had any calls? Have you looked at your cell phone and seen the name Tick Sagerblum come up?
I have had a conversation with Senator Sagerblum. It was a very short conversation, but, you know, I think what his concern was kind of mirrors what I've heard from other people who are interested in this. They just want to continue to have the dialogue about this issue. And, you know, what I did was I referred them to the governor's office. This is a governor's bill. Obviously, it went through the Assembly Judiciary Committee, but the governor and his staff have been the point person for this. So I let Senator Sagerblum know that we were certainly open to it. Obviously, the version we passed out of the Assembly Judiciary Committee doesn't allow consumption lounges, but keep in mind this is a long process. It still needs to go through the Assembly as a whole, still needs to go through the Senate. I realize we only have 5 or 6 days left, but if you multiply that by 24 hours, we're still at 100, 120 hours.
Hey, you've got one day with 25 hours if you go back to the Gwynne administration, because they pushed it back because of daylight savings time.
Yes.
So in actuality, we are not at the final stage here, and this could get blown up.
It could. I think, you know, I'll give credit to the governor and his staff, and particularly General Counsel Bryn Gibson. He's been very deliberate in this legislation. I think that's why it's taken a while to get to where it is. And, you know, I think what we essentially have is we just have a conflict that I'm not sure is going to be reconciled in the next 5 or 6 days. But, you know, you have gaming with their interests and wanting to protect their investment and their gaming licenses. And you have others who want Las Vegas particularly to be on the forefront of consumption lounges, and I think both those points are valid. I just don't know that we're going to solve that in the next 5 or 6 days, but you know, anything's possible. So I know that there are the folks who are advocating for consumption lounges are still doing what they do. They're still working on lobbying that issue, so we'll see where things end up. I believe we'll pass it out of the Assembly as it is now without the consumption lounges, but obviously it has to go through the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate as well.
And you know, Carson City becomes a voodoo town because things that have died come back to life mysteriously in the waning moments. Let's take a break. More with the chairman when we come back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia. Yeah.
Because of UMC, I'm putting my free time to good use.
Because of UMC, she keeps me on my toes.
Because of UMC and this guy, I'm here.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature. Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines, just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Chairman of Assembly Judiciary, Steve Yeager. Criminal justice reform. You know, a lot of people have come on this program and said that Justice Hardesty was just being a little too aggressive in what he initially put out there. Was it his idea that he would put a lot of things out there and get as much done as he could?
Well, I'd like to give Justice Hardesty all the credit, but those recommendations, and particularly the ones in Assembly Bill 236, came out of the Advisory Commission on the Administration of Justice. So there were two subgroups that worked, and I think we had 14 or 15 people who voted, 11 to 4. So I think those recommendations were a reflection of the data that we received and then some thoughtful discussion. I'll be the first to acknowledge that the bill, as introduced, was a bit on the aggressive side. But, you know, in the legislature, we do what we do here, which is we have thoughtful discussions, and in this particular bill, many hours of discussions to try to get the bill in a place where it made sense. So I think what we have now, and I think we're on maybe the second reprint at this point, I think makes a lot more sense for Nevada. But, you know, the version that came out was a starting point for discussions, and I think it spurred useful and useful discussions that have gotten us to where we are now.
Obviously, prior to the session, the leader you were dealing with was not Cannizzaro. So in your conversations with her, once she became leader, did you have concerns that this was going to get cut back because of her objections and the objections that were coming to her?
Well, I always have concerns about all assembly bills that end up going over to the Senate, right? Because this, this is a three-step process. You get through the assembly and then the Senate and then the governor. So I wasn't any more concerned about this bill than I am any of my other bills that went over there. But I had some good discussions with her, and I think, generally speaking, she is in favor of smart criminal justice reform. And we haven't had a chance to present the bill over there yet. We just passed it out of the assembly yesterday, so I think it's now hopefully going to get a hearing here in the next few days, and you know, we'll have a chance to make our case. But obviously she's got a unique perspective in the criminal justice system, and
well, you both do.
We do, yes. And you know, we get along really well, and I think we realize that we, you know, in her instance, she has her day job and my former day job as a public defender, but you know, we realize we're here in a policymaking role to make the best decisions for the state of Nevada.
It'll be interesting to see what ends up coming out of this. Do you think it's going to end up just being held over until the next session?
I sure hope not. I think the time is right to do this now. And you know, one of the benefits that we had was over 11,000 hours of technical assistance on this project. And if we are able to pass Assembly Bill 236 substantially in the form it is now, we're going to get three more years of technical assistance to implement it. I worry that if we don't pass it this session, that that opportunity will go away. So I think now is the time, and I'm sure hopeful that we're able to get it through, particularly given all the work that we did in the Assembly. I mean, I don't know how many hours since the session started, but probably close to 100 or more hours with 25 or 30 interested persons trying to make this as good as possible.
All right, so now the big question as we come to the end of the interview is, are you going to get out on time, or do you fear that Senator Settlemyer, because of this two-thirds ruling, that you don't need two-thirds to extend these taxes, that he's going to file a legal brief and that you're going to end up being here, you know, maybe quite a bit longer?
I'm confident that we're going to get out on time.
Because?
I just think the way that the session is going, we'll find a way, even without the potential two-thirds vote. And, you know, if litigation happens, litigation happens. But I think that's something that's going to be decided down the road. I'm confident that we'll be able to get our budget where it needs to be without the two-thirds vote.
How do you do that? I mean, are you still planning on extending those taxes?
I'm not sure. We did vote on that on the assembly floor, and then we undid the vote, and it's on the desk right now. So I think those discussions are still going on. But I do feel confident that even if we're not able to get the two-thirds vote, we'll find a way to make the budget whole. Obviously, I'm hopeful that we don't end up in litigation. That's never a place we want to be as a state because it costs money and time. But I know that others are working very hard to make sure that we get out of here on time Monday night, and I'm sure we're going to do that.
Okay, but I will let you know that Carson City is very beautiful in June. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir. Thank you so much for all you've done during the session and for being here, especially this morning.
Great, thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. Come visit Design Outdoor's store and backyard to see our wide selection of fire pits, barbecues, and pizza ovens, natural stone water features and fountains, and frostproof pottery. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
One of the most psychologically damaging things parents can do to children in divorce is disparage one another, which is why I can't believe I even have to make this commercial. Half of your kids' genetics come from this person you're spewing hate about. Your children have the right to love you both, but more than that, they deserve to love themselves.
Marilyn York might be a men's rights divorce attorney, but this is for every selfish parent. Shut up!
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. And a lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel here of amazing lobbyists. We've got Trey Abney, managing partner for the Abney Talking Group. John Sandy IV is lobbyist with Argentum Partners, one of the owners, of course. Alexander Marks is the NSCA political coordinator, and Russell Rowe with the Rowe Law Group. Pleasure to have you all here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start out. We're going to cover as many topics as we can over the next couple of shows. Let's start out with minimum wage. What's going to be the effect of what passed?
I mean, it'll happen now. It's going to go through. Governor's going to sign it. What is it, $12 by 2022, I think, if I got the numbers right. I mean, places like In-N-Out are paying that right now, so not an immediate effect. It certainly won't help young people who are wanting to get their first job. Any increase won't do that. I think you're going to see more automation as we move toward that. But an immediate effect in this economy, again, most companies are paying at least that now, so not an immediate effect.
Any thoughts on minimum wage?
We supported it. We think it helps a lot of our ESPs. It'll help a lot of people, and that's why we're supporting it.
It's an interesting thing because, at this time in Nevada, minimum wage, if you're paying minimum wage, you're probably not getting any employees. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're not paying 17, 18
that's
bucks
right.
an hour,
right.
You're really having a hard time. But it's what happens during the next recession that's going to be mm-hmm. the problem.
Yeah, and frankly, this deal could have been done last session, really, right? I mean, it was pretty close. So getting it done now, it's really kind of anticlimactic for this session, in my opinion.
It's been interesting to watch this session because with the Democrats in control of both houses and the governor's office, the same thing that happened to Senator Reid when he had 60 votes in the Senate is happening here, which is you still don't get everything done because there's innocent fighting within your own camps, correct?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like any legislative body in Nevada, we have 63 different people with 63 totally different opinions, and just because you might come from the same party doesn't mean that you're going to agree on everything. And so you're always going to have those disputes, and it's always going to be difficult to find consensus and compromise on legislation that's important.
Alexander, one of the things that obviously has been a big deal here over recent days is that rural schools are very concerned, their districts, about the funding formula mm-hmm. and the changes made. Do you want to share where we are at this point?
And they have every reason to be concerned. I think the way the bill is formatted, we are calling it the freeze and squeeze. When we were presented the presentation by Jeremy Aguero, the three districts that will benefit from his new plan are Clark, Washoe, and Mineral. Every other district will have their budgets frozen starting in 2021, and it could end in 2021, but we have done some back of the napkin kind of math. There's districts that could see a frozen budget for 62 years under this current plan. That's unacceptable. Every kid in Nevada needs to be educated. Every kid deserves that fair shot, and you can't pick winners and losers and new winners and losers, and that's what we believe this bill does. We're trying to work on that issue. We have proposed amendments. The bill, I believe, will be voted on this morning in the Senate floor, and then it'll go over to the Assembly. We're hopeful that we'll be able to get those amendments in to fix the rural issue. But they have every reason to be concerned right now.
Russell, is this really the effect of term limits and the growth of the state in terms of Clark County and to a lesser extent Washoe County, that the power has moved and therefore the funding is moving with it?
Yeah, I think there's no question that those changes that occurred well over a decade ago are now finally coming home to roost in the Nevada legislature. But look, there's been tremendous discontent in Southern Nevada when it comes to education and how the state funds education and what happens. And not saying it's necessarily completely unfair to Southern Nevada, but being someone who grew up in Southern Nevada and has kids in the education system in Southern Nevada, I know firsthand the impacts. So there's a significant amount of discontent, and I think anyone who discounts that is seriously underestimating it.
John, what do you think about the idea of the local counties having to vote on a sales tax when the sales taxes are so high in both Clark and Washoe, where perhaps some of the greatest need is?
Well, that's really getting to a large part a structural problem with our tax system. You know, there's not a whole lot of places that we can derive revenues from, and sales tax is one of the most the easiest, I guess, politically expedient.
Politically expedient, but extremely regressive.
Very regressive tax system. Yeah. I mean, it's not. I definitely don't think that's the way you want to craft a society and community around, is around sales tax and that type of regressive tax system. But we are somewhat limited in where we can go, and I think that plays out every session when we start talking about needing revenue.
But we didn't really hear about services or tax on services at this session.
We didn't, and the Indy wrote the other day about how we didn't really deal with property tax either. I mean, you've got two legs of the stool that you're not really dealing with. We always talk about business tax, commerce tax. We're going to see the MBT not increased, but maintained, right, with or without a two-thirds vote. But we never talk about a sales tax on services. We're a 70% now service-based economy when we used to be the exact opposite when we created our sales tax system. And our property tax system is a mess. We're the only state in the union that has it the way it does, with the depreciation factor and all that. And until we fix those, we're going to consistently have, foundational deficits in these local governments until we fix. Sales tax is easy, yes, but in Washoe County, we just passed a sales tax for school construction, WC1, that I was heavily involved with a couple years ago. And to Alexander's point, if every student in this state deserves a great education, I'm not sure one county doing this and another county not doing that and providing those unequal funding streams, I'm not sure that works either. But.
And we didn't see property taxes tackled here in a big way as
right, and I think I agree with his point completely of, if it is kicked down to the commission level, at this point, I think the conventional wisdom is Clark is probably the most likely to pass it, maybe. Yeah. But Washoe just had WC1. I don't know if there's the appetite to continue another one.
John is shaking his head. Right. For those
exactly.
on the radio.
I don't know what the Elko County Commission is going to do, but I could take a safe bet that that's probably a no on that as well. And again, you're now creating inequity again.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take a break. We're going to bring you back on the next show. Much more to talk about, especially consumption lounges when we come back.
A bird's eye catches its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Penny, Dad? What are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this. Wow, this stuff is great. People are gonna love it.
Yes. Yes, they were.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lorianne, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
In addition to NevadaNewsmakers.com, you can also watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll see you on the next broadcast.